1420 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Christopher Cruz. It's got the stock market roaring back today. The U.S. added 336,000 jobs last month. CBS's Natalie Brand takes us inside the numbers.
A new report from the Labor Department shows overall the U.S. economy added 336,000 jobs in September, and numbers for July and August were revised significantly higher. The unemployment rate remained near a historic low of 3.8%.
Why do you think this report was better than expected?
The U.S. economy has remained much more resilient than has been expected.
Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst for the personal finance website Bankrate, says bars and restaurants are back to pre-pandemic staffing levels, and the government increased hiring, including new teachers.
Donald Trump has endorsed the candidacy of House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan to be the next Speaker of the House, filling the vacancy created when Kevin McCarthy was ousted. CBS's Nicole Killian has learned more about what preceded the motion to remove McCarthy.
Trump ally Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz put forth the motion to remove McCarthy this week. Gaetz told CBS Miami reporter Jim DeFede he consulted with the former president before the historic ousting.
Did he sign off on that? Did he give you his blessing?
I think his exact words, Jim, were do what you have to do. And that was enough of a blessing for me.
Migrants continue to be bused into Chicago with little or no warning, says WBBM-TV reporter Andrew Ramos.
To make matters worse, the migrants hadn't eaten for hours, leading one volunteer to drive over to a local Burger King, spending hundreds of dollars of his own money on meals.
When they are sent here from Texas, many of the times they don't have any food the entire way.
Since August of last year, more than 17,000 migrants have been bused into Chicago, with 14 buses arriving Wednesday and at least 11 arriving Thursday. The city's on track to surpass last week's record of 27 buses by double digits.
UAW President Sean Fain says General Motors has made concessions in talks, including agreeing to put EV battery plant workers under the union's so-called master agreement. In a UAW-provided video, Fain says there's more work to be done.
But it's not about theatrics. It's about power. We've shown the big three that we're not afraid to use it. And we have shown the big three that we are ready for a record contract when they are.
Unlike on most Fridays, the union is not expected to expand the strike. Less than an hour before the close, Wall Street is popping after today's unexpectedly strong jobs report. The Dow is up 1.25%, S&P 500 up 1.5%, NASDAQ up 1.75%. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Embarrassed by ugly yellow toe fungus?
Living with toe fungus it's embarrassing. I was afraid to take my socks off. I hid my yellow and crumbly toes from everybody.
Introducing Crystal Flush. Crystal Flush is the only FDA-registered 2-in-1 home treatment that attacks your toe fungus from both the inside and out. Crystal Flush's new and different combination system knocks out toe fungus for good, guaranteed.
Crystal Flush is different. After just a few weeks, my fungus was gone. I mean, 100% disappeared. Crystal Flush was the only thing that ever worked. So if you're skeptical because you tried a bunch of other stuff, Crystal Flush is different. This is a game changer.
Crystal Flush is now available without a prescription, but it is not available in stores. Get your risk-free supply today. Go to crystalflush.com. That's CrystalFlush.com. Stop being embarrassed by ugly yellow toenails. Go to crystalflush.com or call 800-204-4484.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Monday, October 9th. In Wood County, the Public Safety Committee will meet at 9 a.m. at the courthouse. The Wisconsin Rapids Parks and Recreation Commission will meet at 4. The Wood County State Wildlife Advisory Committee will meet at 5:30 at the Sandhill Wildlife Area. The Village of Buren Board of Trustees public meeting will begin at 5:30. The North Central Community Action Program, Inc. Executive Board of Directors will meet at 6 by teleconference. The Wisconsin Rapids School District regular Board of Education meeting will begin at 6 at the board office. In Portage County, the Finance Committee will meet at 4. The Stevens Point Transit Commission will meet at 4:45. The Public Policy and General Government meeting will begin at 6. The Special Common Council meeting at 6:05. the Personnel Committee at 6:15, and the Finance Committee at 7:15. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI Civic Media News.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight, otherwise partly cloudy. Lows dip down to about 33, northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. Highs level off around 53. Cloudy skies. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow night. Lows level off around 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 55.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this October 6th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. And part two at 3:30, we're going to welcome in Representative Scott Krug. Looking forward to talking with him. Really looking forward to this conversation. I have been all week, you guys. I want to thank you guys for being here and welcome in Matt Bentivega.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you, Matt, for being here. And Deacon Tom Anderson, Charlie, thank you for being here.
Problem. Thank you.
Appreciate this. And we're here today to talk about the Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial and the ceremony and procession that will follow coming up. I always like to be journalistically honest with the audience when it comes to these things.
Sure.
As a little kid, I've wanted to be an actor since I was 7. The only thing I've wanted to be longer than that was a fireman. I grew up in Chicago. One of my first field trips was to the Chicago Fire Department. It influenced me and hit me like nothing else. And I admire few people more than firemen and EMS workers. I literally wouldn't be here without either one of them. They delivered me. I was born on a white couch in the middle of a snowstorm. And I was born thanks to firemen and EMS workers being there delivering me. I literally wouldn't be here without them. So I got no integrity with this conversation. I am looking forward to diving into this and spending some time focusing on some of our important, really community groups that I don't think we spend nearly enough time on. So let's dive right into this. And I want to get into the history of the exhibit at first, if you don't mind. And I don't know if, Matt, you want to take that or you want to share, just kind of go back and forth with the history of the memorial.
I guess I can give you a little bit of backdrop on that. Back in 1995 is when we came up with the idea. And when I say we, there was probably three, four people that kind of had the same idea at the same time. And we kind of put our heads together, said, is this possible? We knew it was going to be a huge risk, but we went ahead and just gave it a shot. And we went down to the state and asked about making this Wisconsin Rapids the state firefighters memorial location. And then we just kind of snowballed from there. You have to go through your local governments, obviously, and the two don't always mesh perfectly together, but we did that in 1996, after a lot of work down in Madison and a lot of work here in Rapids, became official with the governor signing it that Wisconsin Rapids would be the state firefighters memorial location. And then just a few years later, we started building it as far as the flagpoles and few things like that, and then the statue went in 2004, so it actually has an anniversary next year.
Years. I thought it was close. I thought it was coming up. That is incredible. 20 years already.
20 years.
Whoa.
That goes by really fast.
Every spring, when I start my running, exercising, that's where I start. That's why I start every one of my races right there, or walks or whatever I'm doing, I start there. But I feel like I've been doing it as long as it's been there, and I didn't realize it's been that long. That is remarkable. Not to put you on the spot, do you know about the design, where that came from? Because that's one of the things that's always stood with me. I really get that design gets me almost every time I look at it.
If you look really close, and if you almost need to take a bird's eye view of the park, because if you looked up from the sky a little bit, you'd see that where the names on the wall are. And again, this firefighters memorial, and now it's the EMS firefighters memorial, was meant to represent those that all firefighters, present, past, those that are going to serve. And if you look down on that, the base where the wall is, it's in the shape of a Maltese cross, and the statue's the center focus of that. Obviously, our main focus with the wall is the line of duty deaths.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of snowballed from there. We we talked about different things that we wanted in the park setting. Firefighters are community oriented, so we wanted a community. So that's why you have a gazebo, and we came up with the fire station. We wanted an old time one because that's timeless.
Yeah.
You put a modern station up there, it's like a leisure suit, you know, in 20 years it's gone.
Yeah,
you know, it just doesn't, loses its flavor.
Thank you for that. I appreciate the history lesson. Sure. And I think even with it being 20 years ago or whatever, I don't think a lot of our audience is going to either remember or know some of that. So I really appreciate that, Charles. Yeah. Thank you.
And it's all monies raised voluntarily. I mean, that's, nothing was coming from the state or...
Well, in the grassroots effort of this, that I get the feeling of getting this, even this project, the idea of it, getting it signed into law, getting to this point where now we're celebrating 20 years like that, that there's something about that to me speaks so much more and makes me feel even closer to the monument, to what this is about and mean. Not to say that if a government organization had come up with this and put it there, that we wouldn't feel something from it, but I feel like there, it has that much extra meaning to it because of the history of it.
Right, and because you didn't have any tax money.
Yes,
You know, we did it all, volunteers came over and did it. We're talking about $1.5 million.
Yeah.
You know, $1.5 million to build that. We picked probably the most beautiful area in the Wisconsin Rapids.
Yeah.
It represents 72 counties, so that's an honor that we have to hold close to our hearts.
Well,
and all
said.
Firefighters need to do that, EMS personnel.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
It's a great place for anybody to come and pay their respects to those who have fallen, right? To bring their families and enjoy the setting within that area. It's just very beautiful.
You know, one of the things that it does for me, too, is it has this beautiful balance of, I go over there and I have a solemn moment. I think about those people we lost. But I also have a moment of hope and faith in not only our society, but in these individuals and the individuals that follow them and the people that come after them and taking up that spirit, taking up that meaning of what this is to take on this job. It's weird because it's one of those things. Oftentimes I've been to many monuments and that send tribute to a certain organization or certain people. I'm Jewish. I've seen a lot of these for Jewish people and stuff, and they tend to really pull up my heart, and I leave them usually being kind of sad or something. With this one over here, yes, I have that moment of solemnness, but I also have a moment of hope and encouragement. And I don't know how you can't create that necessarily. You can't maybe write that. I don't know if you can put that on paper and make it happen, but it did. I find that really beautiful.
The statue itself kind of emits whatever you want it to emit.
Yeah.
You got three individuals up there. They're not necessarily all male, female, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's depicting somebody that's in harm's way. Now, you don't know if you're pulling somebody, if somebody lost somebody, a friend of theirs, that's their friend that they're pulling out of that rubble. Mm-hmm. If they were able to save a life, that's the life that they saved, pulling it out of that rubble. So everybody that goes there, again, it's a park, it's a community, and you hit it right on the head because you're supposed to have different emotions as you walk through it.
Yeah.
And if you felt that, then we did okay.
Yeah, you did. Oh, did all right. You did very okay. Each October, a ceremony is held at Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial in Ben Hansen Park in Wisconsin Rapids. It includes a number of different things. Can we tell people about the event? Matt, I'll ask you to start that off.
Sure. The ceremony is to bring awareness to those who have fallen for the year, right? Them and their families. We recognize those fallen individuals with a stone, their name on the wall, and then the family's also given a flag. So it's that appreciation for what they've committed service-wise and what they've given up with their lives. So it's very important that these people are recognized for the amount of work they've done within the service. And this is, again, for both fire and EMS. This isn't just the fire service anymore. We're trying to incorporate all those people who give up their time and dedication to the safety of everyone around them. So.
Before we go through the event, it's the day itself and all the timing of the events and what you can expect with it. You mentioned the EMS being a part of this now. How long has that been the case, and where did that idea come from?
It's been the past 2 years that they got included in this. And I think the importance of it is understanding how much they sacrifice along with other firefighters, because within EMS you do have some fire departments that are both fire and EMS, and then you also have those standalone EMS individuals or stations. And we want to recognize everybody that puts in the time and the effort to protect life. So I think it's really important to include them within this memorial.
Yeah, yeah. Was this something that, how did this come about exactly? Was it something, it was an idea, and is there a board that approves it, or?
Yeah, I think there was many discussions between the board, the EMS board, and the Fire Memorial Board, and those discussions were to start to include them in. That, again, happened 2 years ago, so. Mm-hmm.
And certainly noteworthy. And I remember when it happened, the cheers that came from the community about it.
Oh, absolutely.
And the encouragement about it. That I think it fits, and it makes it that much more meaningful. You know, and that's really hard for me to say, because it hit me so hard early on, even before the EMS was attached to this. And now with the EMS attached to this, it gives such a more meaning to it.
Right. I agree.
Let's talk about the day. It is coming up this Saturday, October 7th. It'll be tomorrow. The memorial service will start things off at 3:33.
That is correct. Yeah, but our day starts a lot earlier than that.
And that's where I wanted to go. That's where I wanted to go, because I know you guys ain't getting there like 3:30, you know, and we're ready to go. How does your guys' day start? Where is the beginning of that?
I think my day probably will start around 10, if not a little earlier, to get up here to start set up. So there's different areas that we got to set up. We have to set up chairs for the families. We set up a couple of tents to make, depending on what the weather will look like, there'll be beverages for the individuals. So the, we set up the podiums. There's a lot that gets involved, because you have a lot of different moving pieces. And you have to align everything together. So who's going to be speaking during the ceremony, all the stones set up, and the areas for viewing and stuff like that. So we're also setting up an area for the families for when they first get there, so they can kind of talk. To Tom, I believe, is going to be doing some talking with families to see if they have any needs that they need to be met.
Yeah, I was
that
quite
day.
Honored.
And then there's the honor guard that's going to be working with them also a little bit before, and the honor guard walks during the ceremony also. So there's a lot of recognition. There's a lot of involvement by all parties within this event.
When it comes to the time of the memorial service, why is that significant? The timing at being at 3:33.
Yeah, 3:33 is symbolic of the signal of the final alarm in Wisconsin. Three rings of the bell, ring of the bell three times. It's a tone of that person's final alarm that they will answer.
I don't know if that's common knowledge, so I always like to make sure we address that. I hope it is. I hope I'm repeating information everybody already knows, but just in case, I think that is incredibly significant and meaningful for people to understand why it's at that specific time.
Yeah, the trumpet sounded,
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Yeah, yeah.
A call to duty. So.
And there will be a memorial. There will be playing of bagpipes with this event as well. Certainly quite the connection with that, and our firefighters, of course.
Correct.
That's a meaningful moment, too. We'll have a choral there presentation and the traditional firefighters' bell ceremony, as we mentioned that. The public is invited to attend the ceremony, by the way. If we're encouraging people to come down for this event, is there a time that they should get down there at? Or because... We send a bunch of people this way, and it's a smaller park. We certainly don't want to have
the parking
influx.
I mean, you'd be parking along the street or something like that.
Yeah.
So take that into account, and then obviously watch the traffic. A lot of fire departments are there, so I mean, but come down. It's an awesome thing to watch and to see what goes on when something like this happens, and maybe you'll meet some of those families that did lose somebody this last year, and it does tug at your heart. I mean, they lost somebody very important to them, and it affects not only them. Of course, it affects the whole family of EMS and firefighters, and we take it very much to heart. I was very pleased to be able to come back. I mean, I was president for many years, and now I come back as a deacon, as their chaplain. So... That's nice.
Kind of full that circle. That's really cool. And appreciate that. Thank you.
I
think that, obviously, it is hard losing somebody, no matter
it
what.
Is.
In this scenario, it's almost unfathomable if you haven't experienced it, if you haven't been through it. I think as a society, one of the least and literally least things we can do is being at an event like this and sharing our giving our honor to the people that gave so much to us. It's part of the society. It's part of what I think it's not to take, get on a soapbox here or anything, but I think it's one of the things that Americans do better than most. We honor our fallen. We honor our people. And this is an opportunity to do that.
I think when we mourn as community.
Yeah.
That's relationship. That's who we are. It's just that we're a little bit, that community comes down into where we absorb ourselves as firefighters. That's a brotherhood, and the EMS personnel, we're brothers and sisters mm-hmm. throughout this type of protective services. So, yeah, we mourn our own.
Yeah. After the memorial service, what will happen after that?
Later in the evening, there'll be after the final alarm, there'll be a silent procession. That's where several different fire departments will bring their trucks out, and they'll drive a route with their lights on to remember the fallen. So that service will start, or that silent procession will start at 7 p.m., and it'll start at the memorial itself. It will go down 2nd and drive around into Wisconsin Rapids around Baker, and then follow back on Grand and back to the memorial itself. Again, that will be several different departments that will have their engines or maybe the ladder trucks, and they will be driving with their lights on in remembrance of those who have fallen.
Yeah, I know that for some, they can't get down there. My parents both had hip surgeries and everything,
sure.
So they might not be able to. But I know that they're going to try to catch the parade, if you will, of this and somewhere there. So encourage people in the community certainly to be able to do that, too, and take a moment to be able to honor these fallen in that way as well.
Absolutely. Definitely. If you want to sit outside to watch the vehicles drive by, definitely we appreciate those. That's definite support we need.
And speaking of needs, always want to say a big thank you to the fire service people, the people that keep this wonderful memorial up and running or up and looking good all year long and that.
Right. Yeah. So during the year, we have a lot of departments that volunteer their time from all over the state itself. And they come out and they do weekly maintenance around the park itself. That's cleaning the building, that's mowing the lawns, that's picking up trash, picking up debris that's all over the grounds to make sure that it stays in immaculate condition so that when anybody comes and visits, they're appreciative to what the park looks like and is, you know, gives them that sense of enjoyment. Mm-hmm. So we do that also during the winter. Usually 24 hours after a snowfall, we have somebody come out and clear all the pathways so people can walk through there. But, there's lots of times that we can't get departments out there to do some of that volunteer work. So if there are people who are within the community that are willing to come out and give up their time to do a little bit of work around the park, we definitely would appreciate that.
Hmm. If people are interested in volunteering, is there somebody we can contact, somebody we can reach out to?
Yep, there's some contact information on our website, wfem.org, or if you're on Facebook, you can reach out to the Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial on Facebook. There's definitely somebody monitoring those, and we'll get back to you with any questions that you may have.
And a big thank you to all the people that do volunteer and that have already put some time into that and keeping that thing looking beautiful. I never see that thing looking bad.
Right.
I'm over there all the time, and I never see it looking bad. That's
right.
Really impressive.
Perpetual care takes time and effort,
yeah.
So that's what we're asking for.
Yeah,
people just give up a little bit of your time, especially the firefighters and EMS personnel. Come on out and help it all.
Yeah, and we got a really good community when it comes to that stuff.
Right.
We got to remember, we're representing 72 counties. This is the state firefighters memorial. It's not Wisconsin Rapids memorial. It's the state memorial.
Mm-hmm.
It's representing the whole state, all 72 counties. So that's important.
I think that gets lost in the shuffle sometimes.
It does.
And I appreciate any chance to note that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, for one, I think for lack of a better word, I think it's pretty damn cool. I think it's really awesome that we have that right here.
Something that we need to push next is to have the city of Wisconsin Rapids place it on their sign.
Mm.
That this is the home of
mm-hmm.
the Wisconsin State Firefighters Memorial or EMS Memorial now. So that's important.
when we when we're talking about our city to people and we're selling our city to people, this is one of the things that comes up in top five top five things of conversation. For me, it does. And I'm really proud of that. So I agree with you.
Other states, they actually put in a bid process to get that memorial near them. This was given.
I mean, it
didn't cost the city or anything, anybody.
It's a good note. It's a good note, sir. Thank you, Deacon. Thank you. Matt, I don't want to put you on the spot, but are you a firefighter?
Yes, I was a volunteer firefighter. Right now, I'm not in a department. I spend a lot of time working at the memorial. I'm the go-to guy for whenever there's needs at the memorial because I live in the area. So at this point, I was on Park Ridge, but that department was a volunteer department. And it was dissolved within the past year. So I just haven't gotten back on another volunteer department.
But thank you for that. And thank you for the what you have put into our communities already, including this memorial. Part of the event is certainly to give honor to those we've lost and also to bring attention to the EMS workers, the firefighters that are currently working. I know that I don't have to tell you guys this, and I'm sure that our audience has seen we are in need of firefighters. We are, most of our communities are desperately in need of good firefighters. We want to reach out to anybody out there with a good heart and a strong will to look into being a firefighter and volunteering. And when we talk about volunteering and maybe helping clean the memorial or being a part of this event, that stuff is included in this as well. But to those brave that can do this work, like Matt did, like many others out there in our listenership have done, our tip of the hat, our thank you to you, our appreciation. Might have lost my dad if it wasn't for firefighters here in Wisconsin Rapids. My family went through a fire about 5-6 years ago, and my father is Italian and stubborn, and would not leave the house until like certain things were out and everything. And I'm thankful that I still got that man, and I wouldn't without the great fire workers that we have in this community. We encourage you to be a part of this, to find out more about it, and see if this is something that might be a good use of your time, because there is a great need for this right now.
Absolutely.
As we're wrapping up, guys, just got about a minute or two left. Is there anything you want to touch on that we haven't had a chance to? Did we cover everything?
I think it's trying to build some relationships with some of the businesses around in Wisconsin Rapids. We'd like to reach out to you guys to say maybe we should try to figure out if there's some synergies between us that we can start helping each other out, whether it's through marketing, communications, just to help each other out to make sure that we can grow our relationships.
Yeah. Really solid point. Yeah. Most businesses are looking for opportunities to get their name out there and looking for PR. You cannot find much better PR than attaching yourself to something like this. I would encourage any local business to be a part of this. Get in on that. And if they are interested in doing so, same place to send them as we do volunteers?
Correct. At this time, would be best to either go to the website, WFEM.org, or the Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial Facebook page. Again, there should be some contact information in there. Just reach out to us, and we'll
be great.
See what we can do.
Matt and Deacon Tom, thank you both so much for everything you're putting into the community, putting up with me for 20 minutes or so here, and hanging out with us today. That's thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Opportunity.
The Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial Final Alarm and Silent Procession will be tomorrow. Memorial service will be at 3:33, Silent Procession at 7. We will have more information for you about that on our shows coming up. And we have more coming up here at Midday Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. The Antigo School District closed schools district-wide yesterday after the middle school received a bomb threat on Wednesday. The report came into the police department close to 10 p.m. that night. District administration decided to close out of caution for the safety of students and staff. A thorough search was performed at the Antigo Middle School by law enforcement and school administration. No dangerous or suspicious materials were located. Searches were also conducted at other schools throughout the district, but nothing was found in those either. The investigation is ongoing and no further information is available at this time. The 25th annual Nakusa Giant Pumpkin Fest is this weekend, October 7th and 8th, at Riverside Park in Nakusa. They'll have carnival rides and games, a children's tent, raffle baskets, crafters, and food. There's also a car show, and of course, the giant pumpkin drop. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight, otherwise partly cloudy. Lows dip down to about 33, northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow, highs level off around 53, cloudy skies. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow night, lows level off around 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 55.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this October 6th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, and I am joined by our friend, Representative Scott Krug. Scott, good afternoon.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How you been, man?
I'm all right. It's getting a little busy down in Madison, so a lot more trips back and forth in the fall, but at least it's a beautiful drive all the way down the state to get into Madison. Because honestly, I don't spend a lot of time in Madison besides the Capitol, but there are a few better cities that I can think of in the fall than Madison. When you're getting around the Capitol and Camp Randall and all those areas, it's just incredible in the fall.
Everything along the lake is just so beautiful around there. I couldn't agree with you more, man. It is. I love that city. It's one of my favorite cities, honestly. But it really comes out to play this time of year. Everything just looks beautiful. That's good to hear. And I'm with you on the traveling. I look for reasons to travel. Like even if it like that, just go out and get the mail, just to get outside and look at these trees and the beautifulness of this area. I want to get into a couple of what's gotten you busy and why you're going back and forth to Madison in a bit. But actually, Scott, I have to pull an audible here. We just had in Matt and Deacon Tom talking about the Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about their honor session tomorrow that they'll be having. And the guys threw me a curveball here because they knew I was interviewing you next, and they said how supportive you have been of the memorial and helping getting it there. So we wanted to thank you about that.
Yeah, it's been a long process. We've had a bill the last three sessions here to try to restore some of the funding for the memorial.
See, you knew this, Scott. You got right where I was going with it.
Well, I mean, it's been an ongoing issue because these guys have worked great on trying to convince the rest of the legislature, because back in the day when Tommy Thompson appropriated Wisconsin Rapids as the location for this statewide memorial, he said that the state would take care of it in perpetuity. So what we've been trying to do with the help of their association is to make sure that promise is kept and make sure Wisconsin Rapids gets to maintain its place and the memorial gets to stay a statewide focus for all EMS folks who come here on a regular basis to honor those who have fallen from year to year. And we're going to keep working on that.
I appreciate that, Scott, and good work going forward with it, because it's important for many reasons that the audience doesn't need me to ramble about. But it's also, for lack of a better way of putting this, it is tourism. And we understand how big tourism in this state is, and especially here in central Wisconsin. It is something that brings people to the Rapids area, brings people to your district. It's important for those reasons, along with certainly most importantly, the remembering the people that we have lost.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm in the Capitol or around the state at events where people will say, your district's got Rapids. Well, we come there for so-and-so. Or your district's got Rome. Well, we go there for so-and-so every year. And I mean, even just last week, we had the ATV VIP ride out at Syracuse here in Rome. People from all over the state showed up to see what's going on here. So same with the Firefighters Memorial. I've got friends in the legislature who have family who are volunteer firefighters or they're professional firefighters who are here every year. So we have that connection with everybody statewide being in the center of the state of Wisconsin. And that's ultimately why Tommy and his brilliance decided to choose Wisconsin Rapids for the location. So even next week, after the memorial service this week, not next week, but the week after, we have our First Responder Day at the Capitol, where we've got 99 legislators bringing 99 brave EMS firefighters, police, EMS, ambulance drivers, whoever it may be from their districts to recognize how important the work is that all of our first responders do. So it's it's this time of year where we spend a lot of time working on the firefighter memorial, the police memorial, recognizing EMS and firefighters and police and all of those folks who do the great jobs that they do. So it's perfect timing to have this service every year at the final bell, you know, ceremony, and I've been honored to be a part of it for years and years and years. So we'll keep recognizing them and helping them as much as we can.
The Wisconsin Fire and EMS Memorial Final Alarm and Silent Procession will begin tomorrow at 3:33, and the Silent Procession will begin at 7. Encourage everybody to take that in. Scott, as long as we're talking essentially tourism a little bit, I'm curious. We've seen the numbers, and we know how well Wisconsin has done bouncing back from the pandemic tourism-wise. Seeing that things are kind of hot right now when it comes to that, you, your colleagues, is there conversations about how to really jump on this and hit on things as they are kind of hot in this state where you want to bring in even more? Are you looking for other opportunities to do that?
Yeah, I think you saw a few great opportunities just, you know, in the state budget and right before when we passed the new shared revenue bill, where we index all of the shared revenue that comes back to our municipalities from sales tax generated, because we know that tourism is hyper hot right now. So all the sales tax that gets generated from folks from all over the country and all over the world who are coming to Wisconsin is going to end up coming back to our communities to better fund our roads, our police, fire, EMS, our communication systems, public work projects. So that's how we're capitalizing on the first end of it, is trying to get all of those dollars those folks are bringing to go back into our communities a little bit quicker. And then second, we did some direct funding for some things in the state budget to make sure that places like Lambeau Field could get the NFL draft, to make sure that we've got resort towns like Rome and, you know, Green Bay and Sturgeon Bay and some of those high resort areas that can capitalize on some taxation, you know, issues where folks, again, coming into those resorts can pay an extra 1% income tax or sales tax, or the sales tax more or less than anything, but that would stay with that resort community and help build infrastructure around those resorts to make them even more attractive. So I think everybody is seeing that tourism is rising to the top of the heap for industry for the state of Wisconsin, right next to manufacturing and agriculture. So we're all hypersensitive to how great Wisconsin is on tourism right now. It has been an absolute boom that we haven't seen in recent memory.
I apologize. I heard nothing after NFL draft. I'm kidding. I'm just excited about the NFL draft and very excited about the future of tourism in this state. We're speaking with Representative Scott Krogan. Scott, I like to always ask what's on the ballot. I know just the other day you in the Committee on Campaigns and Elections held an executive session. Can we hear about that?
Yes, we execed on a few bills and heard four more in public hearing and campaigns and elections. So I think the biggest theme that we're taking away from the bills that we are actually executing out of committee is that they are bipartisan election reform bills, making sure that Republicans and Democrats in the governor's office all agree on what we have to do to fix some of the problems that still exist in the election administration. So some of them were a little lighter on the importance scale for now, but some of the things that we heard that we're going to exec in the next couple of weeks, pretty big deal. So like one was the timing of presidential primary ballots, you know, when the federal government's requirements run into state law requirements, sometimes they don't match up. So we literally have a situation in Wisconsin where in presidential primary years, absentee voters end up getting more than one ballot in the spring because of the timing of our primary and our general election. So we're tightening up those rules to make it a lot less confusing for voters in the presidential preference in the spring that only have to get one ballot to return. There's so many things in everybody's life that keeps them so busy to try to keep up individually with election laws and administration, where they have to get two ballots for one election, where they would think, well, I already turned in my ballot, I'm not going to send the second one back in because I already voted. Well, not realizing that they're actually different ballots. So we're tightening that up to make sure that the timelines are in place, that federal law matches state law, and just trying to figure out that timing and this administration of it. And the other bill that I think was really important that we execed out was the notification that your ballot has been returned. So all municipalities will have an option now to return to you via text message a confirmation that they've actually received your ballot, which is just another, it's more than feel good, but I think the feel good part of it's really important, where people can feel safer and more reliable on the Postal Service, know that their ballot got to where it needs to be on time, that the clerks can acknowledge that, yes, we've got it, you don't have to worry anymore. Just taking away a lot of that perception issue that we've got around elections in the state of Wisconsin has been a big focus of our committee the last 9 months, and now into the last 5 or 6 months here of session. We're going to have probably another 24 bills are going to be coming through that we're going to get to the floor. We're going to get them through the Assembly and the Senate and get the governor to sign a bunch of these. So we're really in a good place on just trying to clean up some of this low-hanging fruit and resolve some of the issues that some people still have about 2020, and just making sure we're looking forward to 24 and beyond.
Scott, do you think it won't be until 2040 that we stop talking about 2020? I'm kidding, but
yeah,
I think
you're right. I mean, you know, it's tongue in cheek, but you're right. I mean, that is exactly what we've been talking about the entire time as the chair of this committee is, you know, you keep relaying that message to people saying, yeah, you know, I get where you're at with this, but we're looking forward at making sure that 2024 is not another 2020, no matter what the issue is or no matter who had an issue with what. My whole goal is that 2024 is not going to be another 2020. So regardless of what people's thoughts may be on it, there are certain things that we can do to make sure that perception is more solid all around for everybody. And the biggest thing we're going to do is this earlier processing of absentee ballots. So there will never be a situation again where, whether you believe them or not, that Milwaukee County ballot at 2 a.m. in the morning is not affecting the outcome of the election, because we're not going to let them count ballots at 2 a.m. in the morning anymore. We're going to let them start earlier, the day before, get through all their absentee ballots. So like every other state in the country, we can have election results before we go to bed.
And it's,
you know, and I talk to people all the time about, and they say, well, these ballots showed up at 3 a.m. No, they didn't. They were already there. They just take a while to count because there's 600,000 of them to get through. So letting the process happen a little bit earlier, whether it's observable and making sure it can be done at a better timing of the day is just, and I think 90% of our problem right now. So it's just got to get fixed.
When it comes to both of these bills, you mentioned they have a bipartisan committee with them. They have people behind it bipartisan. Is that the case with these?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Literally every day where we're talking to members, not only in our committee, but members in the legislative chambers, whether it's the Assembly or the Senate, where we're all having these conversations on a daily basis at this point to say, okay, there's this component of it that you don't like. How do we fix that component of it? And this is something that we've just rarely done in my time in the legislature, is actually see where a bill is, find the issue in committee, talk it out in the committee and say, okay, I've got a Republican that wants to work on fixing it. I've got a Democrat that wants to work with the Republican on fixing it, or vice versa. And we can actually solve some of the things that we don't like about each other's bills. And, you know, I take a lot of crap for it from both sides of the aisle, but that's exactly what my job is. I mean, I can't describe it to people any better than my job is to get bills through my committee, and I see my job as getting bills through my committee, meaning that they're going to get signed into law, and knowing how to get a bill signed into law is pretty important. And when you have a split government, that involves making sure the other side of the aisle is good with the bill. So, you know, I got a lot of folks on the further right who will try to kick my head in a little bit, saying, well, you shouldn't work with so-and-so. I'm like, just settle down. Good public policy. Doesn't matter where it comes from. If it makes sense, it's a good thing to do.
I couldn't agree with you more. Very well said. And I will say to those politicians, whatever side of the aisle they are on, giving you any heat of that, I wouldn't worry too much, because they probably won't be in their job in much longer. If there is one thing that has been very clear from the American people, especially in the last couple of elections, small to big, from your position all the way to the president, we're not, you can be replaced. And we will do it. I think that there's a standstill going on, and we'll get to that in a second. But the idea of dragging feet or officials not getting things done, bills passed, that kind of thing, those days are gone. Things got to get done going forward. We got too much important stuff to do.
Yeah, and I tell this story. You may have seen the Washington Post story that came out this week about my Adams County Lincoln Day, where I was literally giving a speech, and the guy who was dressed up as Abraham Lincoln started heckling me during my speech that I'm not conservative enough. Like, Where do you get that from? I am literally ranked the number one conservative in the legislature the last 2 years. And I think people get confused on what the heck conservative means versus what some people think their Republican background is. I think some people are so stuck into MAGA and Trumpism sometimes that they don't realize what they really actually stand for. So, I mean, not to blow your point into a bigger discussion on when I talked to people at that Lincoln Day dinner that night who were cheering on what was going on in Washington and cheering down a government shutdown, I reminded them that my son's in the Navy and that with all of this bickering and nonsense that's going on in Washington, a government shutdown means that my son serving his country is not going to get a paycheck. Like, what are you cheering for? I reminded those people that we live in Adams County, which is the third poorest county in the state of Wisconsin. I reminded those people that night that there are a lot of people in this county who are on WIC and who are on food share, who don't have great opportunities in Adams County because there's not a lot of manufacturing or jobs in that area that are going to end up having to go without. So they're not going to get the support they need. And I asked them, what the heck are you cheering for? What are you trying to accomplish with some of this, you know, chaos that you keep trying to say is needed? And I just tried to bring back this realism, and to get heckled by a guy dressed like Abraham Lincoln at a Lincoln Day dinner was just surreal I had to fight back a little bit and say, hey, let's live in the real world for a while here, folks. So
yeah. Scott, the actors are on strike right now. I'm looking for some work. So what do you think my chances are of being the next Speaker of the House? What do you think? I got a 20% chance on this or whatever?
At that same dinner when I was talking to Derek Van Orden's rep in the local area here, I said, hey, if DVO is looking for somebody to run for Speaker, tell them I'll jump in. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's so weird, right? I mean, where we're at with this discussion is, are we in reality or are we doing reality TV government? Can we make a choice and we just either sit back and watch it implode and enjoy the reality TV, or can we actually get back to reality? So Washington is broken, plain and simple. Don't count on it. Don't look for it to solve your problems. You know, just try to tone it out for a little bit, because next Tuesday, Wednesday, when they start voting for another speaker, people will be watching. People will be yelling. People will be screaming. In the end, they're going to find a speaker, but they better do it damn quick, because I will raise holy hell if my son in the military is not going to be able to get a paycheck because idiots in Washington can't figure out how to pass a funding bill.
And that's the point that I wanted to get to, and I appreciate that, Scott, because I'm curious of, while this is going on in D.C., and to some people, that's a billion miles and miles and miles, and almost another country in some ways. This does affect your district. This does affect us here, and you touched on right away how it does, and there are other ways it does, because they're in a standstill here. Nothing's getting done while this is going on, while this inter-party bickering is going on, and it could happen to either party, and we've seen it happen to both parties. So I'm not trying to pick on a certain party either way, but it is happening with the Republican Party currently right now, and it is accumulation of a civil war that's been going on. I shouldn't say that, of a debate, a disagreement. Yeah. I don't like misusing words going on in the party. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel with this?
You know, I do, because, you know, if you look at where Wisconsin's delegation was, I mean, you know, there's no infighting with the Republicans in the Congress that represent us in Wisconsin, right? They were all on the same page, common sense, saying, hey, we got to keep the guy we came to the party with, we're going to go home with. So, you know, as state delegations start talking with each other, some of the more outlying state delegations are going to have to come coalesce around somebody. And I know that even the ultimate of the crazies out there, I call them crazies sometimes, I shouldn't, but yeah. Matt Gaetz and some of those guys, the next speaker is going to have to set rules before he even takes the job, where he's going to say, well, we're not going to just let one person blow this up. So whether it's Jim Jordan or Steve Scalise, whoever wins the speaker's election next week, there's going to be new rules in place. They're going to take away this one person ability to blow up the entire system. So I can't imagine anybody ever taking the speaker's job again, leaving things open like McCarthy did, where to get the position, he had to give up the ultimate shiv, and he got stuck with it in the end. So the light at the end of the tunnel is that the rules that were in place are going to be different, because the next speaker is not going to put his neck on the line like this speaker did. So you know, lesson learned, you know, next guy up, you know, now it's time to move on and actually get the funding bill done. So whoever they pick is going to have to figure out how to get those eight people back so they can pass some funding resolutions to, you know, continue funding government. But at the same time, you know, I see the point, right? I mean, when the national debt is ballooning by $500 billion every 3 days, there's problems. It's got to be addressed. It's got to be looked at some point.
Hmm. Scott, I'm curious, do you think that that is a preview of what could happen with the Republican nominee, that we could see a splitting of party here?
You know, usually that's not what is going to take place, I think, after presidential primary season. I think everybody is still kind of tribal enough in their politics in Wisconsin to, you know, not just take their ball and go home at the end of a primary. We've seen it in our governor's primary last year with Clay Fish and Michaels, and we see it in other primaries, even on both sides of the aisle, where, you know, whoever it is that loses the primary usually comes back out and says, yeah, okay, I hard won, fought, congratulations, let's move forward together. I don't see that happening in this coming presidential primary. But, you know, there's always a wild card where something happens and Donald Trump doesn't win. You never know what Donald Trump's going to do. So
that feels like the definition of the wild card, because if he does not get the nomination, it is hard to imagine that his followers, which I will call them, are going to not vote for him or not try to write him in or something of the above.
Yeah, you know, and if the party suffers because of that, then that's where the party suffers. I mean, if you look back in history, this is the little history lesson of the day is this is the Teddy Roosevelt fight of the Bolivar's Party, right? Where Teddy didn't think that his, you know, original protege was going to be good enough for the job. He decided to run against him, and all of a sudden Woodrow Wilson walks into the White House because of the inter-party fighting. So if the Republican Party wants to keep fighting and let the Democrats keep walking back in, that's to their own peril. If they don't, then they'll have to figure out how to get it back together and move forward. So, I mean, there are not many choices for them to figure it out.
Recently, you got to spend some time with our Eagle Scouts, and there was some history made with that.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, we've had a lot of Eagle Scout ceremonies in my 13 years in office, but for the first time in Wisconsin Rapids history, got to honor two female Eagle Scouts on the same night back a week or so ago here, 2 weeks ago maybe already, but it was great to get together with all of those folks and describe what it takes to be an Eagle Scout and the dedication that it takes for not only the Scouts themselves, but for their support systems to be there to help them earn all their way through, and followed it up just last week with a presentation to a bunch of fifth grade scouts to tell them how to end up to be at that same exact point of these high school age scouts. And I keep telling them that, you know, when you look at what the rest of the world is, you know, come back to what you're learning as a scout. You know, it all revolves around being a good citizen. It all revolves being a good human being and just taking care of the people you're surrounded by and reminding everybody that you're around that, you know, we all work together, we all have common goals, we all basically think the same thing, and we just need to work together more. So it's nice to relay that message back to the scouts when people in Washington can't understand it. Kind of help our future leaders understand that they have to be better. It's a lot easier job to tell them to be better when the current leaders are not doing a great job.
Big congratulations to Maribel Miller and Natalie Dillon, good on them for that. Scott, because I consider us friends, I'm not going to bring up the Brewers. No,
You know what? We should.
Yeah, we should. Really? I want to know what you feel of the what your thoughts on the season are.
You know, my thoughts on the season were I did not expect them to end up beating the Dodgers or the Braves in the end, but I would have liked to have maybe one more series. Mm. But it's great timing to talk about because the stadium issue is still on the forefront, and we're actually looking to have a floor vote on the Brewers Stadium. I think October 12th is going to be the day we're going to bring this up, and I wanted to tell people real quick about what the deal really is. Because a lot of people say, well, I don't want any more tax dollars going to the Brewers. Why should the billionaires get our tax money? You know, things like that. So back in 96, when the state decided to be the owner of the new building, and we took on a responsibility that is hard to let go of because now we're the landlord. So when the building is now 25 years old, and in the history of baseball stadiums, that's getting to be kind of old, even though we don't think of AmFam Field or Miller Park as being an older stadium. Got some issues that's got to be dealt with to stay up with Major League Baseball standards. So the way the deal is being put together right now is to take the income tax from all of the players who come to play every day, because when you come to Wisconsin to work, no matter what it is, the amount of money you're earning that day is taxed. So say you've got a guy like Shohei Ohtani from the Angels is going to come to Milwaukee and play an interleague game. The guy's making $600 million a year or something. That portion of his income is taxable in Wisconsin, and it comes into our general fund right now. So the way the deal is set up is to say all the income tax earned from all the players that play in Milwaukee throughout the year is just going to stay in the stadium district to fund the stadium. No loss to taxpayers, no change in what we're bringing in. It's just a different way of allocating where it's going out to. So basically the $600 million deal that you're hearing about is funded from income tax from all the players coming and sales tax money from everything that's sold in the stadium. So it literally is honestly cheaper for us to keep them than to lose them to Nashville or San Antonio or Montreal. Because once they're gone, all that income tax money and all that sales tax money is going to go wherever those cities have them from now on. So, you know, it would have been great to have the bill up when the Brewers were in the playoffs to make it a little easier, but they didn't make it, but we still have a good public policy decision to make, and it makes sense for us to keep the Brewers in Wisconsin.
And to tie it right back to where we began things, tourism, and how important that is in this state, and how many people come to see those games, whether the Brewer fans or the opposing team. I mean, that brings a lot of that into this state. I think it pays for itself, even if. And you and I have been doing this long enough. You saw where I was going with this. That's exactly where I wanted to wrap up, was that bill. So nicely done, sir. Appreciate
that. That's perfect, because, you know, the consequence is the Brewer's lease ends in 2030. Right. So we see what's going on in Oakland right now with them relocating to Las Vegas. Their last 3 years of attendance were basically nothing, because who's going to come to a game for a team that's going to move away? Nobody.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're looking at imploding the team after next season entirely, then let's, you know, let them move. But I don't think it's good public policy for us to do that. So this lease actually extends them all the way out to 2050. So the Brewers will be part of Wisconsin for the long term to come here.
Scott, always appreciate the time. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk again next month.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care. We'll see you soon.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you next week right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The United Auto Workers Union says General Motors has made a major concession in bargaining talks. UAW President Sean Fain in a union-provided video.
GM did something that was unthinkable until just today. They agreed to put the future of this industry under our national agreement. This victory is a direct result of the power of our membership.
Unlike the past few Fridays, the UAW has not expanded its strike to other facilities. The government says employers added 336,000 jobs last month. That's about twice the number most economists had expected. Business staffing analyst John Waldman says one part of the report really stands out and could mean even better times are ahead.
For the first time, the government's reporting that the food and beverage sector is back above their February 2020 employment levels.
Who will be the next Speaker of the House? President Biden weighed in on that today.
Whomever the House Speaker is, I'm going to try to work with. They control half the Congress, and I'm going to try to work with them. There's some people I imagine it's going to be easier to work with than others. But whoever the speaker is, I'll try to work with.
Republicans are expected to vote on the next speaker next week. In San Antonio, organizations that help migrants say they are struggling to keep up with the influx of people crossing the border. More from KENS TV reporter Mike Jimenez.
San Antonio Catholic Charity CEO Antonio Fernandez says the center is doing its best to handle the influx of migrants. He says last week the center saw nearly 7,000 migrants. The previous week, nearly 8,000. some of the highest numbers the center has experienced in the past year and a half. The center recently received funding of $231,000 from the federal government, but he says it's not enough.
We don't have enough capacity. We do have money from the government. It's not enough right now.
Iowa's Democratic Party says it will concede it will hold a caucus by mail on January 15th, but won't release the result until March 5th, Super Tuesday. Details from CBS's Jim Crisula.
The decision is the state party's attempt to hold to Iowa's leadoff spot in the presidential nominating calendar without violating a new national party lineup endorsed by President Joe Biden.